Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, fight fans. I'm Mo Chatra, and welcome to the debut episode of MMA Monthly. Yes, it's the newest addition to the Anfield Index channel, and I'm joined by one of the staple founder members of the Anfield Index, the one and only Dave Hendrick. How are you doing, Dave?
I'm good, Mo. I'm good. I'm looking forward to seeing if I can upset people as much talking about MMA as I do when I talk about football.
Well, I'm sure that won't be too difficult for you, but we're going to have lots of fun with this. There's always plenty to talk about where mixed martial arts and especially UFC is concerned. And, I'm really looking forward to doing this on a monthly basis with you, Dave. So, very excited about this show as well. We've got plenty to talk about and we'll get stuck in. Now, obviously being our first episode, it'd be good to just introduce ourselves in terms of our following of mixed martial arts, and so I'll let you start off then, Dave. How did you firstly get into MMA, and what drew you to it, and what really interests you about it?
So I have family in the States, and I remember one Christmas they came home, and my uncle had these VHS tapes with him of UFC events, early UFC events, like, you know, from UFC 1 onwards, that he'd recorded. And my grandmother had a Region 1 VHS player that I don't know how she came across it, but it was in the house anyway. So I just remember watching those with him, much to my mother's annoyance, and just been fascinated by how different it was, like, to boxing. And it's obviously that famous fight in UFC 1. I still can't remember the guy's name, but he fought Hoist Gracie. And he wore one boxing glove. And he tapped out because Gracie lay on top of him and didn't actually do anything. And it was just, like, really fascinating to see the different styles come together and how guys were trying to adapt their own kind of, you know, technique into it. And then sort of it was very hard to follow from home for a number of years when they were going through, you know, the spell where the company wasn't making money and it wasn't on TV and nobody really cared. And it was, you know, on the verge of dying, really. And then I became friends with a guy called Mark who was massively into it. And at the time, the UFC champions were Matt Hughes, Rich Franklin, Chuck Liddell, and Tim Sylvia and Arlovsky were like the two heavyweights that were kind of giving the title back and forth. And Mir was involved, and there was that sort of era. So you're looking about UFC in the, like, say, late 50s to early 60s, you know, that kind of era. So what, are we going back maybe 10 years?
Just before it really exploded in terms of popularity, that's right,
about 2000. Yeah, and you had some such great fights back then. Like, you had Matt Hughes against BJ Penn. You had Liddell and Ortiz. You had Liddell and Couture. You had Couture and Ortiz when Couture gave him a spanking. Matt Hughes was always kind of was fighting the likes of Phil Baroni and Frank Trigg and guys of this, and there was just lots of different guys and different characters, and it was an interesting kind of growth of the sport. And then obviously it took off when the Ultimate Fighter started, and I think that's kind of when it became this mainstream sport. So I was quite happy that I'd sort of got in before that again, sort of my second discovery of it. And for me, the fascinating thing was seeing how it had evolved from where it was in like the UFC's say 1-5 to where it was from say 55-65, because they'd obviously settled on a set of rules. There was like entrance music and there was like big crowds, and it was obviously on pay-per-view, and you had just, it was more of a spectacle, whereas before it was sort of this like a naughty little secret, and like there were literally no, well, there was like no hair pulling and no fish hooking and no eye gouge, and I think we're about the three rules. So you had like guys literally winning fights by just repeatedly punching people in the balls, and it was just like guys like Tank Abbott and Don Fry and guys who would have had their asses handed to them later on had been the fighters at the start. So before it was like a tough man competition, whereas later on it did become more about, you know, being well rounded. Like originally, obviously Gracie was the best, but he had one thing he was brilliant at. Later on, you had to be rounded, not as much as now, but you had to be like good in at least two things and great in one to get to a high level. Like Liddell was a great striker who was a good wrestler, and like Matt Hughes was a decent striker, a great wrestler, things like that. So for me, getting into it at that time, it was really interesting to see like the different styles, and you'd see like a Matt Hughes fight a BJ Penn, and they're obviously both grapplers by trade, but there's the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu versus the wrestling. And I obviously was a big Pride fan. I was actually more of a Pride fan than a UFC fan for a long time. So I love the contrast of the ring versus the cage as well.
Absolutely, yeah. No, that's a great story. And you know, I was very similar to you. I got into mixed martial arts in 1994. I used to read pro wrestling newsletters from around 1993. And a couple of them reported on this UFC one show from late 93. And it caught my attention because now by that point, as a wrestling fan, as a long time wrestling fan, I was well aware that pro wrestling was not real. It was not above board. It was predetermined. It was choreographed. And one thing I'd always been quite intrigued about was what pro wrestling might look like if it was real. And when I heard and learned about this promotion, and also learned about a couple of other promotions that were out there as well that launched around the same time, such as Pancrase over in Japan, which Ken Shamrock started out in before coming to UFC at UFC 1. And you know, these promotions were ones that intrigued me. And it was the following year in 94 that through a pro wrestling tape trader, I managed to get hold of UFC 2. And I remember watching it one night and being blown away. And, you know, looking back at that show now, I mean, it wasn't, you know, a particularly great show. I mean, the fights were not incredible. I mean, there were some interesting kind of strategies adopted and whatnot because of, as you mentioned earlier, the kind of lack of rules. But it was just something like the likes of which I'd never seen before. And I thought, wow, this is quite something. And I wanted to see more of it. It was difficult to get hold of UFC tapes, as you mentioned. And it was around 96 that I managed to get a tape trader over in the United States who was supplying me with WCW Monday Nitro on a weekly basis. And he was sending these through to me. And at the same time, I was ordering the UFCs from him as well, as they were occurring every 2 or 3 months at that time. And I managed to get hold of all the back ones except for UFC 1 from him as well. So I was caught up on my UFCs. And then from there on, I just kept up with it, even through those really quiet times when UFC was pretty much, and mixed martial arts was banned in nearly every state in the United States. But I was ordering my UFCs and I stuck to it religiously. And I got into Pride when it first launched in 97 as well. And you know, it was a nice, refreshing contrast to UFC because of the ring and the slightly different rules with the longer rounds, etc. You know, I saw the sport evolve, you know, through the early noughties, and as you mentioned, once that popularity really started to skyrocket after the Ultimate Fighter, you know, the sport just started to change beyond all recognition. And long before then, I'd been writing for a pro wrestling magazine, which listeners of the Pro Wrestling Index will be familiar with, called Power Slam. And it was around 2003 that I started a MMA column on a monthly basis in there. And I was covering MMA for about a decade in that magazine. And through that, I managed to attend some UFC shows. In fact, I attended the UFC, I think it was 38 show at the Royal Albert Hall back in 2002. Which was just about less than a year after the Fertittas and Dana White took over UFC. And at that time, UFC was well in the red by many millions of dollars. Mm. And I think UFC was really a massive drain on the Fertittas' finances. They were people who were involved in casinos and hotels in Vegas. So whilst they were making money through that, you know, they didn't have a bottomless pit of money to keep UFC going. But they stuck with it for another couple of years, had one or two little breakthroughs with Fox Sports Net, and then the Spike deal, and when the Ultimate Fighter launched, it just took over from there. But I've stuck with UFC during that time, and I've seen it evolve, and it's just amazing. And you know by extension, mixed martial arts too. And it's just been an amazing journey, an amazing ride. And the sport just keeps getting bigger and bigger. I mean, up until a couple of years ago, I thought, you know, maybe it just might start to decline. You know, there's one or two individuals, big names, careers have come to an end. I don't see where the big stars are. And then all of a sudden, Ronda Rousey and Conor McGregor just took off and became bigger stars than everyone that preceded them. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, because Lesnar left and then GSP retired or took his hiatus.
Yeah,
and lots of people thought the same, though. Lots of people thought, well, what do they do now? There's no stars. But the great thing about the UFC and the way they've, like, the Fertittas deserve huge credit. Dana obviously deserves huge credit. And their matchmakers are just brilliant. What they've done so well is they've enabled opportunities for others. So, like, even now, you see, we'll talk about UFC 206 in a minute, but you see Conor McGregor been lifted out of the featherweight division, and they've made a star of Max Holloway now. Like, he's a guy that could go on to become a very popular fighter, kind of 12, 13, 14 years after BJ Penn became a very popular fighter from the same kind of lineage through Hawaii. But, like, you mentioned Pancreas, and I've since gone back, watched all the old Pancreas events, and, like, those were really entertaining, and they're still fun to watch now. Like, a lot of the old UFCs aren't as fun to watch because it's just, like, two bums fighting at a bar, like. But a lot of the Pancreas stuff, they were so technical. It was a lot of hybrid wrestlers and stuff, and you had, like, the catch-as-catch-can style that Josh Barnett is probably the last remaining soldier in MMA who's still at that. But, like, the Shamrocks... Yep. were pioneers of that in the mainstream. And, like, when you go back and watch the, like, Frank Shamrock was probably the first great all-round fighter.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, you look at when he left the UFC, people thought, that's it. That's their biggest star gone. They can't survive without him. And then Tito became a huge star. And then Chuck became a huge star. And then just more and more growth, and these guys were becoming bigger and bigger names. And, like, it's just, that's the way it has, this sport has morphed. And, like, Anderson Silva came in, a guy who hadn't done all that well in Pride, comes into the UFC and just blows the place up. GSP was, like, their first real sort of product of the UFC. They got him really young, brought him in, had a couple of fights to kind of set him up for the higher level. And once he hit that higher level, like, it just grew and grew and grew with him. And he had such crossover appeal as well, because he's a good looking guy and bilingual, brings the Canadians, brings a lot of Europeans because he's like French Canadian.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then like Brock bringing in the wrestling fans as Shamrock, and to a much lesser extent the likes of Tank Abbott and Dan Severn had done back in the 90s. So the UFC have always been very clever about, you know, cross branding and, you know, bringing in fans from other sports and other avenues. And you see it now with McGregor. Like, he's done that video game. He's probably going to do a film in the next year or two. And it's just going to bring more and more attention to mixed martial arts. And again, you're bringing in whole new audiences. And they've done it so, so well. And like, look, the Fertitta's bought the company for what, $1.5 million or something stupid.
Yeah.
And just sold it for like $4.5 billion. So, for all the credit they deserve, they've been well reimbursed. But as you mentioned, Mo, they were throwing money left and right to try and keep this thing going, and it was the Spike deal that changed everything.
Oh, totally. And you know, that if that deal hadn't been made, then you could argue UFC might not even be around today, because, you know, there's not many people out there that are going to put money into something that had been around for, by that point, over a decade and was losing money hand over fist. And, you know, these guys were willing to stick it through the tough times and give it a chance. And they really believed in it. That was the most important thing. They felt that they really could make this something very, very big, as long as it got the right exposure. And once they got that big break, and it was a second TV deal, the first one with Fox Sports Net, at that time, which was a fairly small scale TV network, was, you know, the first ray of light that they had. And that was the thing that really led to the Spike deal. And then, you know, with the Ultimate Fighter coming on after Raw, WWE Monday Night Raw, that is, on a Monday night, you know, a lot more eyeballs are watching MMA and UFC than ever before. And you know, as you say, that was a massive difference maker for them, and the rest, as they say, is history. And talking of history, they had another historic night last weekend with UFC 206, which took place in your new hometown of Canada. Toronto, Canada, sorry. And that was one of the best UFC shows of 2016, in my humble opinion. A really, really good card. Now, I mean, for time, and because these UFC shows have, you know, 200 fights per show, we can't run through every single one. So what we will be doing is sticking to the main card fights. And if we just run through those then, Dave, and we'll start off with the opener on the main card, which was a welterweight contest between Emil Mech, a Norwegian fighter making his UFC debut, against a guy who'd been in retirement for a couple of years, who's still only 27, one Jordan Mine. And this was a fight that the debutant Mike won by unanimous decision. And what do you think of this fight?
I thought this was a really fun fight. First of all, I got press accredited for this event, and I had planned to go for the last couple of months. And then TSC went and got their way to the MLS Cup final. And because I'm press accredited there, I had to go to that.
Yep.
So I missed one of the best events of the year to go and watch one of the single most boring games of soccer you will ever see in your entire life. So, it was with much annoyance because I'd read some of the reviews of 206 before I watched it, and I was like properly pissed off because the game was horrendous and I knew I'd missed, you know, a really, really good card. But like, Emil Mech, he drew Jordan Mine into his fight. He wanted a brawl. He wanted a scrap. Mine is a more technical fighter who really just shouldn't have played that game with someone like Mech. Now, maybe he didn't know enough about Mech to know any better. Like you say, he'd been off, you know, on the shelf for a long time. But this was a fun fight. And, a lot of times, fights go to the distance and they can be quite boring. But this was a legitimately fun fight between two guys who just went out there, laid it all out, and in the end, the better man won. Mech was brilliant on the night. Put his punches together really well. Took some big, big shots, but just kept coming forward, kept engaging, kept pushing the pace, kept making mine fight his fight. And he came away with a deserved win, and I'll be excited to watch him fight again because he's one that I really enjoyed. And maybe he's somebody that might match up down the line with, you know, some of the bigger name welterweights.
Absolutely, yeah. No, I completely agree. He certainly seems to have something. And, you know, he was already one of my favourite MMA fighters at the moment coming into this fight before he'd even done anything in this contest against mine, purely for the fact that a few months ago he fought against one of the biggest dickwads in the whole of MMA, Ruslan Palhares, and knocked him the fuck out in 45 seconds. So for that alone, Emil Mech is a hero. And, you know, he certainly showed personality and lots of ability. I mean, he's a stand-up fighter, and yet in the second and third rounds, he took the fight to the ground. He really wanted to win this fight, didn't want to debut on a losing note, and controlled Mine. And, you know, Mine's a more experienced fighter, and yet, you know, Mech made it look almost easy and was a deserved winner. And, you know, he's a big welterweight as well. And certainly against some of the other guys in the division, you know, I think he can have a lot of success. So I'm really interested to see where his career goes. But a good win for Emil Mech in the opener of the main card. The second contest then was a middleweight contest against a guy who's not always been in UFC's good books, a guy by the name of Kelvin Gastelum, who often fought at welterweight, but has missed weight on at least two occasions. And he was up against a veteran middleweight fighter in Tim Kennedy. And this was another very interesting and entertaining fight, wasn't it, Dave?
It was. And like after the just the disgraceful act at 205 by Gastelum, where he was signed to fight Donald Cerrone, and he just couldn't get his weight down, and he didn't even bother turning up to try and make weight. So he's lucky the UFC didn't fire him, because, you know, they fired guys for less in the past. But
yeah,
credit to him, comes out in this fight and he puts on a show, and he was excellent from start to finish. Tim Kennedy's done. Tim Kennedy should retire. At this point, he's just risking an injury. He was talking before the fight about maybe making a run at the belt. I think that has a lot to do with the fact that it's Bisping, and he's beaten Bisping in the past.
Yeah.
But Tim Kennedy's done. And, you know, there's certainly a role for him in MMA. I know he's part of this new fighters union. Mm. I think he's a very intelligent guy. He's certainly a leader of men. He's ex-military. He's all about organization and the details. So he's a guy who can play a big, big role in that. But in terms of his days as a fighter, I think they're over. One thing that did bother me, though, was Joe Rogan's sort of comments about Gastelum before the fight, about his, you know, not making weight and stuff. I just thought he was overly harsh, got a little bit personal with some of the comments. I just didn't think they were very fair. I think Rogan's better than that. But look, Gastelum can only do what he can do, and he went out and he won the fight, and that's all you can ask of him.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, he looked very good. Arguably his best ever performance in the UFC. I mean, he's had some pretty good wins, but I thought this was as complete a performance as we've seen from him. The only interesting thing is, I mean, at the end in the post-match interview, we did talk about wanting to go back down to welterweight, which, you know, runs a risk of missing weight for what I think be the fourth occasion, in fact, which would almost certainly get him fired. But after the show, it was then announced that his next opponent will be none other than UFC legend Vitor Belfort at middleweight. So you know, he has to stay in that division at least for one more fight, and he's got a massive opponent in Belfort coming up, and that should certainly be a very good test for Gastelum in terms of exactly how good he is.
That could well be Vitor's retirement fight as well. Because he doesn't have anything left to offer either. Vitor's been one of the greats, an incredible fighter, an incredible career. Obviously, some some question marks and some black marks against his name with some of the failed tests and stuff over the years. But,
yeah,
you know, a phenomenally gifted fighter, probably didn't become as good as he should have given his incredible stand-up, his knockout power with both hands and both feet. He's a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. He probably should have become, you know, a top five fighter of all time, never reached the levels. He's always been sort of a one-round fighter. If Vitor doesn't win the fight in the first round, you know, he tends to lose. He's a really, you know, destructive fighter who tends to self-destruct after the first round. And that'll be an interesting fight for sure. If Gastelum wins, he's knocking off a legend. And if Vitor wins, he can walk out on a high.
Absolutely, indeed. So, good start to the show then. Two good fights. The third fight of the main card was something else, wasn't it? This was a featherweight contest between Cub Swanson, veteran of WEC and UFC's featherweight divisions for going back a good decade or so, against one of the brightest featherweight prospects in UFC. And this was Choi Ho-Do. I think that's how I pronounce it, or Duho Choi.
I don't know. I always get confused with Korean names because sometimes you see them surname first, and some like Son at Tottenham Hotspur is Son Heung-min, but when he was in Germany, he was Heung-min Son. So I don't know. But regardless, that kid can take a punch. This was one of the most entertaining fights you'll ever see. I would say definitely a fight of the year contender. Cub Swanson showed his incredible versatility in his striking. He was throwing spinning fists, spinning elbows, wheel kicks, you know, switch kicks, literally throwing everything at this kid. And the kid just kept taking it and coming back for more, landed his own big, big shots, hurt Swanson a couple of times. And they were throwing from first bell to last bell. And, you know, the ending, you know, the last 15 seconds of the fight is just one of the most ridiculous flurries you'll ever see. Swanson threw about 8 different techniques, finally knocks him down, just goes over and starts hammer-fisting him with both hands just to try and get the knockout, because he knows it's going to take something to knock this kid out. But, you know, he survived the bell. We might have a successor to the Korean Zombie in this kid, because my God, the punishment he took and the punishment he gave out, it was an immense fight. Really, really exciting. Great technique by both. Choi has, you know, really kind of traditional striking, you know, in the pocket, everything's very neat and tidy, big, big power. Cub Swanson is just one of those really loose guys who just throw whatever comes to mind, but the accuracy is, you know, phenomenal. He's never quite been an elite fighter, but he's certainly a very good gatekeeper. Like, if you want to be a top contender at featherweight, you're going to have to go through Cub Swanson. I think he's accepted that that's his role in the sport now, and, you know, he can still knock guys off. So all credit to both of them. This was a hell of a fight.
Absolutely, yeah, no, that's a great point, Dave. He absolutely is that kind of fighter in this division. I mean, he's number 4 ranked, so, you know, if you want to get ahead of him, you're pretty much in contention for that featherweight title. And, you know, he, you know, busted out every kind of strike imaginable and still couldn't put Choi away. And credit to Choi. I mean, he stood there and took so much punishment. And, you know, barely had a mark on him. I mean, he had a bloody nose and a few scratches around the eyes. But considering the amount of punishment he took, he was relatively unmarked almost. It was a fantastic fight throughout, as you say. Unanimous decision win for Cub Swanson. So, you know, Choi, very disappointed to lose. But I think he'll come back stronger. And he certainly said that, you know, that's his intention in his post-match interview. And I'm looking forward to seeing him again. I mean, he had 2 performances tonight. contests in his previous two UFC fights. And, you know, he's certainly one of the more entertaining fighters in the whole of the UFC. And, you know, this fight very much was, for me, reminiscent of the Korean Zombie versus Leonard Garcia fight from many years ago. And, you know, just all action from beginning to end. And these are the types of fights that UFC really needs a lot more of. And, you know, when they do come along, they're absolutely a joy to watch. And if you do get a chance, I certainly urge you to make the half an hour or so just to check it out, because it's well worth a watch, trust me. Right, on to the semi-main event then, which was a welterweight contest between two of the most competitive fighters in the division, Donald Cerrone and Matt Brown. And this was yet another entertaining contest on this card. And, you know, went back and forth just like the previous contest. But it was the cowboy that emerged victorious, Donald Cerrone, picking up his fourth win of 2016 and really put himself into contention for the welterweight belt. What do you think of the fight, Dave?
It was a great performance from Cerrone. I mean, Brown had his moments for sure. He's always going to, because he's just one of those guys who just keeps coming and coming and coming and throws everything he can. There's a reason Matt Brown has carved out a good career for himself in the UFC. But Cerrone was just, he was just on a different level. His striking is so crisp, so accurate. He's, you know, very tight with what he throws. He doesn't throw anything big and loopy, you know, very controlled. But he was setting up that head kick all fight, and he was landing it when he wanted. He knew it was there. And Brown made one mistake, and Cerrone would, you know, lightning quick and so accurate, just catches him flush on the chin, and it's you know, it's good night, Matt Brown. Cerrone seems to have taken on the mantle from Josh Koscheck of being that guy who'll fight 5 to 6 times a year. Straight in his post fight, he's asking to be on the card in Denver. That's only, you know, not far away. And Dana White is just standing there, like, shaking his head. And I don't think he was shaking his head saying no. I think he was just shaking his head saying, like, this guy is a machine. He just wants to fight all the time. I think Cerrone's better suited to welterweight than he was at lightweight, because I just think the cut to lightweight was having a bad effect on him, because he's a big guy. Like, Matt Brown has fought at middleweight. And yeah. Cerrone wasn't giving up any size to him at all. The thing with Cerrone, though, has always been he can beat anybody on the car, on the roster except the champion, because for whatever reason, when he goes in against the champion, he just freezes. That's what happened when he fought Dos Anjos last time. He went in on a great winning streak and just froze. I think he's going to be better suited at welterweight. I'd like to see him fight Tyron Woodley for sure. I think the better fight stylistically would be Cerrone against Wonderboy. So it'll be interesting to see who wins the Wonderboy Woodley rematch. But, you know, Cerrone with another win at this weight level, I think, or this weight class, I think he's going to really put himself there as the number one contender. Not just for his work in the middleweight, but overall body work. He's a guy that deserves to get a, you know, another title shot. And like his loyalty to the brand and his willingness to fight whenever and not complain. Like, look, you know, he should have fought UFC 205, Gastelum misses weight. He could have just thrown all the toys out of the pram. But no, turned around straight away and said, right, well, if I'm not on this card, put me on 206, I'll fight whoever you want. And comes in last night, gets a great victory and moves on to bigger and better things.
Oh yeah, he does, yeah. And you know, it's expected they'll be fighting against George Masvidal on that Denver show in January. And you know, Masvidal's certainly not as highly ranked as Cerrone is, so Cerrone should win that contest. But after that, if he does emerge victorious from it, you know, you're looking at the likes of Damien Maia, Robbie Lawler, Wonderboy, as you mentioned, and you know, if he's lucky, he might even get a fight for the title against Woodley. But you know, certainly a future that's looking very bright for the cowboy after a very, very good 2016. So then we move on to the main event, which was a very eagerly awaited contest, but was slightly let down by the fact that one of the fighters missed weight, and that was Anthony Pettis, who couldn't get down to the featherweight weight limit of 145, came in at 148. So as a result, we had a slightly bizarre stipulation that it was a title fight for the interim featherweight title between Max Holloway and Anthony Pettis, but the only person that could win the title was Max Holloway. So if Anthony Pettis won the contest, he would not be able to claim the interim featherweight title. And the fact that there was an interim featherweight title in the first place is quite bizarre in a way, because just 2 or 3 weeks ago, UFC announced that Conor McGregor had been stripped or relieved of the featherweight featherweight belt, and he'd be sticking with the lightweight belt. And Conor then has come out in the last week or two and said, well, actually, nobody's taken this belt away from me. It's still at home. So as a result, we've got an interim title until it's decided that this title is definitely going to be put on someone else as an undisputed champion. So we had Holloway and Pettis then, and this was a back and forth fight like the rest of the fights on this show. And we had a finish in round three, and we had the champion crowned in Max Holloway. What did you make of this one?
Well, first of all, to address the title situation, it was an absolute joke that this fight was for an interim belt. Jose Aldo was the interim title holder already. Conor McGregor is the featherweight champion.
Yep.
And that's all there is to it. Like, McGregor is the champion, Aldo's the interim title holder, while McGregor deals with business at an upper weight class. This fight should never have been for title. The only reason it was purely because Daniel Cormier got hurt, and they wanted to give it a bit of glitz and glam. It didn't need it. This was an exciting fight anyway that everybody was looking forward to. Two of the most exciting fighters in the UFC, Anthony Showtime Pettis, is just a whirling dervish of, you know, unusual technique, who's technically brilliant across all disciplines. Max Holloway is one of the best young fighters to come into the UFC in a long time. He's like 24, 25 now. He's really hit his stride. And it was a fun fight. Now, look, Pettis missing weight was fair enough. It was always going to be a struggle for him to stay at 145, because it's not like he was a small 155 fighter. So he'll go back to 155, and I think he can do quite well. I think he can get himself back in the title picture there. But credit to Max Holloway. I thought he was losing this fight at the time of the stoppage. Pettis, I thought, had been controlling early on, and then he broke his hand. And the second round was a little bit sort of, you know, to and from. Into the third round, Holloway started to take control and really just put the fight away in an impressive fashion, like hurt him and stayed on him and basically made him quit. But like the idea that this fight was for a title just bothered me the whole time. The current champion is now Jose Aldo, who Conor McGregor knocked out in 13 seconds. The interim champion is Max Holloway, who Conor McGregor comfortably beat in a unanimous decision despite tearing his ACL. So, like, these guys aren't on McGregor's level. Fair enough, you could say that maybe Aldo, like, given what he's done, he's one of the greatest fighters of all time. Maybe he can beat McGregor in a rematch, because in a fight that ends as quickly as theirs did, there's always a lot of questions left. But I don't see any questions with Max Holloway, because while he has improved, McGregor has also improved, and I think he's improved more than Holloway has. So, credit to Max Holloway. I think he's a really good fighter. I think he deserved the win. I think he, you know, is going to be a big name in this company. I just don't agree with the fact that he's parading around now with a belt. That doesn't mean anything. Like, fair enough, if you're going to strip McGregor and give the title to Aldo, that's fine. But you don't need another interim champion. You just don't. Like, this interim thing, UFC are obsessed with interim champions. And they're just nonsense. It's just, you know, a way to sell these fights. You don't need to sell them. Sell them on the talent of the fighters. Having a plastic belt there doesn't make them any, you know, more exciting for fans.
Oh, I totally agree, yeah. I mean, as it is, we've got increasing number of titles with an increasing number of divisions within the UFC. And so for your average fan to keep on top of all the divisions and to know who's a champion for each of the different divisions is hard enough. When you introduce interim titles as well, it makes it all the more confusing and just devalues the titles that are there. So I totally agree. It's not great. And it wasn't certainly a fight that was reacted to by the live audience like a title fight. In fact, of all of the five fights on that main card, I thought it was the fight that possibly had the least amount of crowd interest. And there was not a lot of noise. I know it was probably quite late at night in Toronto by that time. But it certainly didn't have the atmosphere of a main event title fight. But nonetheless, it was a good competitive fight. Just a shame that Pettis broke his hand. But I agree, if that hadn't happened, I still thought he should have gone on to win the fight, albeit Max Holloway has come on in leaps and bounds the last couple of years and will be one of the very top fighters in the company for years to come. But, you know, he won the fight. He won the main event. And that topped off a very, very good show, one of the best UFC cards of 2016, and certainly one to go out of your way to see if you haven't done so already. So as we know in UFC these days, you can barely go a week without another UFC show. And so that proved with yet another show, UFC on Fox, this past weekend. So on the Saturday night of the 17th, we had UFC on Fox, which is a four match card. And the opener on this one from this show in Sacramento in California was between Alan Juban and Mike Perry in a welterweight contest. And this was a fight that went the distance, and Juban emerged victorious, Dave.
He did, and he deserved the victory. I thought this was going to be like another Swanson Choi type of brawl, just given the styles of both fighters, but it didn't turn out that way. Perry is a guy that just relies too much on trying to get the knockout. I think his technical limitations were shown up in this fight. Juban used his length, his reach, his technique, and you know, got a good win. And I think he's another one that can go on to bigger and better things. He's very, very talented guy with a bright future ahead of him.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed the fight. Thought Juban fought a very smart fight. Didn't engage, didn't allow Mike Perry to close the distance and get into a slugfest. You know, as noted in commentary, he was just going in and out, you know, picking Mike Perry off, and you know, was very smart. And his experience showed that was a determining factor in him winning the contest. So a bit of a setback for Perry, who's been looking quite promising on prelim fights on UFC undercards, but certainly a learning experience for him, and I'm sure he'll come back stronger. The next fight then was certainly one that I actually got quite emotional about. It was a fight between Sacramento's most famous mixed martial arts fighter, really a legend of mixed martial arts, in my opinion, Uriah Faber, against another veteran bantamweight in East London's Brad Pickett. And, you know, Pickett's a great character, comes out with his Chaz and Dave entrance theme and his hat, and you know, certainly quite an underrated fighter in my view, quite a well-rounded one. But on this night, there's only going to be one winner. It was the California kid, Uriah Faber, by unanimous decision.
Yeah, for me, this should have been the main event. I thought Faber deserved the honor of headlining his last card. It was certainly the biggest fight of the night in terms of draw. Faber is arguably the greatest fighter to not hold a UFC title, who's fought in the UFC for a prolonged period. an incredible career. I'm not a huge fan of him or his camp. Just I don't like their attitude. But what he's done for MMA is incredible, especially the lower weight classes. He really is, like you say, he's a pioneer. And you look at the, you know, the likes of Mendez and Garbrandt and TJ Dillashaw, that these guys, like, they're all where they are because of him. He's done incredible work with the camp, with himself, and he goes out on a high. I was glad to see him get the win. You know, a good performance. It wasn't like a thing that it was like some old guy who was finished just kind of scrapping for one last win. Faber looked like he could continue to fight. He obviously has other plans for his life, and all the best to him. He's had a hell of a career, and it was nice to see him going out on a high.
Absolutely, yeah. Certainly went down enormously well with the hometown crowd, had a great reaction from those in attendance, lit up the Arco Arena, which was the main arena in Sacramento before this new venue opened up a few months ago. And, you know, it was certainly the main reason why I was first drawn to WEC nearly a decade ago. Was certainly the star performer in that promotion.
Faber and Miguel Torres.
Oh, yeah.
They were the two guys that were just, they were the absolute business in the WEC. And then the likes of Aldo came along. But without Faber, there would have been none of it. There would have been no Jose Aldo. There'd be no 145 or 135-pound weight classes in the UFC. Well, you know, there might be now, but there wouldn't have been as quickly as there was because of Faber. He really did just bring so much to the sport. And he's another guy that I think has a very important role to play in the future of the sport from the fighters' union point of view. I hope he's a guy that gets involved in that because he's very articulate. He knows the sport so, so well. He knows the business well. Like, he's a guy who he marketed himself more. I mean, small guys like him, they weren't getting the marketing push from the companies.
Yeah.
But he was able to go out and get his own endorsements and make himself a really good living, and deserves everything he has.
Oh, yeah, totally, yeah, absolutely. Certainly a great asset to mixed martial arts, and I'm sure he'll continue to contribute, albeit not in the octagon. Two fighters you'll certainly be contributing a lot to the octagon for many years to come are Mickey Gall and Sage Northcutt, and these were two guys who had a quite interesting war of words prior to the fight and even during the fight in a welterweight contest. And Mickey Gall, as listeners should be aware, had that very dominating victory over CM Punk early this year. And Sage Northcutt is almost like a poster boy in waiting for the UFC. Obscenely good-looking kid, only 20 years of age, came into UFC when he was, 18 or so years of age. Extremely talented young kid. But it was the slightly older 24-year-old in Mickey Gall who emerged victorious from this one. And what did you make of this one?
I was really, really impressed with Mickey Gall. I thought it was a fantastic performance from him. Controlled the fight, you know, showed decent striking. He's obviously a very, very good grappler. Just took the fight where he wanted it to go and finished the fight. And Sage Northcutt has a big, big future in this sport. There's no doubt. He's still very, very young. But Mickey Gall, for me, just looked like he was on a different level. And obviously there was a lot of talk that maybe, you know, how good was he? We hadn't seen a whole lot because he had a very quick fight in his first UFC outing. He beat up CM Punk, who nobody really took seriously as a fighter. So how good was this kid? And he proved he was really, really good. And I tell you, he surprised me after the fight because, well, first of all, he called out Dan Hardy, and that's a fight I'd like to see. If Dan Hardy is going to go back, there's a good fight for him. But for him to say he thinks he can drop to featherweight, or to lightweight, rather, was really surprising to me because I think he's quite a big welterweight.
He's 6'2".
Yeah, and he was bigger than Northcutt, and Northcutt's a big kid as well. So I don't know, you know, I think it's easy for him to say, oh, I'm going to drop to 155. I don't know that he's going to be able to drop to 155. Like, that's a hell of a drop on a big, big frame like that. He might be able to make the weight, but how much of him's going to be there? We've seen guys before really harm themselves by cutting loads of weight to try and get down because they think they might have an easier time at the lower weight class. And in the end, they just, you know, they can't bring their power down because they lose too much weight and they lose their strength. So I think he'd be making a mistake by dropping down. I think he needs to stay at 170 and just progress slowly. You know, work literally start, get the top 50 welterweights and start picking out who you want to fight. You know, moving slowly up. Don't jump drastically up through the quality of opponent. Build your way slowly up. And eventually, I think he has the talent to become a UFC champion, and he certainly has the personality that's going to make him a big name. You know, he's already a big name in the sport because of the CM Punk fight, but you know, his personality, he's very not arrogant, but he's quite, you know, confident and cocky. He's happy to call people out. There's a certain Irish guy at the moment who's the biggest star the sport's ever seen, who made his name by calling people out and by being, you know, cocky and confident. So goal, that's the blueprint for you. Just look at what Conor McGregor did and just follow it that way, but stay at 170. Don't drop down, because even if you do make the cut, you're going to be in a bad way trying to get down there.
Oh, I totally agree. Yeah. I mean, he's somebody who's 6'2", probably outside of fighting, probably weighs in around the 190 mark. So to get down from 190 to 155, that's a massive drop. And, you know, it's something that will certainly take away from you in terms of stamina, endurance, power. And,
yeah, like, I mean, size-wise, he looks like Nick Diaz's size, doesn't he?
Yeah,
he does, looks like the type of guy who, long run, you're looking at as a middleweight. Like, I just don't see that he could make that cut. Like, I remember Rory McDonald talked about making that cut as well. Like, before GSP took his hiatus, McDonald was saying, maybe I'll go to 155 because I don't want to fight GSP. Yeah. And then it just wasn't going to be possible for him. I think when Gall actually looks at it realistically, he's going to figure out this is not doable for me.
Oh, yeah, totally. And but, I mean, it was very impressive. I mean, I was not a believer in Gall. I thought he was lucky to get signed by the UFC in the first place. I thought he just didn't have enough experience after only one fight, and this was a fight that showed that he is the real deal. I mean, granted, he's not fought a top contender, but as a fighter that certainly belongs in the UFC, he showed it again. It was a very dominating display, and you know, one or two more fights like this and he'll be booked against guys in the top 15. And for a guy who might only at that point be six fights into his mixed martial arts career, that would be extremely impressive. So, you know, he's got mouth, he's got charisma, and he's showing he's got talent as well. So he's certainly one to keep an eye on. And then we came to the main event, and this was a strawweight contest, a female strawweight contest between Michelle Waterson, who'd been away for some 18 months, against a fighter who in 2016 has become one of UFC's biggest names, but not because of anything she's done in the octagon. This was a lady who's come second place on the US version of Strictly Come Dancing, Dancing with the Stars. That's Paige VanZant. And, you know, she came into this contest with a lot of general kind of fame because of that reality show. And unfortunately, she couldn't back it up with a victory. She lost to Waterson, and it was a big night for Michelle Waterson, who moved up in the rankings for the strawweight division.
Yeah, and Waterson looked really good in this fight. She controlled the fight, used her kicks really well, you know, clinched when she needed to, took the fight down, and made it look quite easy once she got it to the ground. She's obviously primarily a striker, but she's got great grappling. This was just a case of a very, very good fighter in against someone who wasn't ready to be at their level. Paige VanZant, all due respect, had no business been in the cage with a fighter of Michelle Waterson's caliber. Van Zandt, to me, risks going on and becoming the Anna Kournikova of MMA, where she becomes more famous for things outside the cage. And that, maybe that's fine. Maybe that's what she wants. I don't know. I don't know the girl. But, you know, Michelle Waterson dominated this fight. Now, I think the UFC should look into bringing the atomweight division into you know, their ranks, because I think that's where Waterson wants to fight. I think Invicta have a couple of really good fighters at that level. I think there's a couple of other fighters in the UFC that would do really well at atomweight. Like, the two Polish girls that fought for the title quite recently, the girl who lost, she'd be more comfortable at atomweight as well. So it's something for them to look into. Yep. I definitely think there's the talent there to add that division and not dilute what they already have.
Yeah, no, that's a good shout. Carolina Kowalczywicz is the girl who lost against Joanna Jędrzejczyk, I think is the way you pronounce it. I should know this, shouldn't I? I mean, she's been a champion and been arguably the best pound-for-pound fighter in the UFC this year. But, you know, nonetheless, they had a really good fight. Albeit Joanna did, in the end, dominate it. But, you know, Carolina certainly was very impressive, and an atomweight division might be absolutely spot on for her. But UFC certainly is, though, introducing a new female division, which will be the women's featherweight division, the 145-pound division. And one suspects that Chris Cyborg might be the girl that UFC has in mind to be the pinnacle of that division.
I think that's the sole reason they're considering bringing that weight class in is for Cyborg, who's just, she's a terrifying human being. And I think she'll do really well. I think she'll carry that weight class in its formative period and then pass the torch when it's ready to be passed and the fighters have developed themselves to get to her level.
Indeed, yes. You know, and the fight that has been talked about for a long time now is Cyborg against on Ronda Rousey. And that segues nicely into us talking about the show that is coming up at the end of this month, which is UFC 207, which emanates from Las Vegas. And, you know, it's shaping up to be a really good show. And let's just dive into the main card for this event, Dave, and the opener on this main card of the fights that are confirmed thus far is a bantamweight contest between TJ Dillashaw and John Lineker. So what are your predictions for this fight, and where do you see this one going?
I like Dillashaw in this fight. I think, you know, he's the number two ranked bantamweight in the world. He's a very, very good fighter, former UFC bantamweight champion who was so impressive in his fights against Henan Barão. And really, he could have won that fight against Dominic Cruz. I think, you know, it was a very close fight. For me, Cruz did win the fight. I thought it was the right call, but Dillashaw put in a hell of a performance against him. But Dillashaw for me is just a better fighter than John Lineker. I think Lineker is very talented, but I'm just not sure he's ready for a fighter of Dillashaw's caliber at this point. But it'll be a good fight. It'll be a really exciting fight. I think it's a fight that could go the distance, because these are two guys that come in, they've got great cardio, and they're both very, very tough guys.
Yes, I agree. It's going to be quite a competitive one. I'll have to go with Dillashaw as well. I think Dillashaw has been there at the top, and you know, he's hungry to get back there again. So I predict a win for TJ. The next contest is Fabricio Werdum against the former heavyweight champion in Cain Velasquez. So two former champions up against each other. And it's quite likely that the winner of this one might be next in line for Stipe Miocic's heavyweight championship. And this promises to be quite a slobber knocker, as Jim Ross from the Pro Wrestling world would say. What do you make of this one then?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this fight. I think Cain Velasquez has a point to prove here. he wasn't 100% healthy for their last meeting, and for Doom, to his credit, you know, won the fight in dominant fashion. I expect Kane to win this fight, though, but the one thing that is concerning me is Kane has already said he's got a surgery booked for after this fight, so he's obviously coming in with some sort of injury. But I still think Kane should just have a bit too much for Verdum, and I really want to see Kane against Stipe Miocic, because I think Kane's the best heavyweight the UFC has ever had. I think he's just the most rounded. I think he's the most talented. I think if it wasn't for injuries, I think he really would have kind of become the real superstar heavyweight that the UFC has never had. It's probably the one weight class they've never had someone who's kind of transcended the sport the way Liddell did at light heavyweight, the way Anderson Silva did at middleweight, and, you know, Chael Sonnen to another extent, even though he was never a champion, kind of became a figure bigger than the sport. I think Kane could have done that, especially with his appeal to the Mexican and the Hispanic fan base. This would be a good fight, though. Like, obviously, for Doom, so much, you know, talent as a grappler, good striking, great experience. He's beaten, you know, a laundry list of legends, you know, including one Fedor Emelianenko. So, you know, this won't be an easy fight for Kane, but I do just think he'll come through. I think he'll win this by stoppage.
I have to agree with you again. We keep agreeing on this one, Dave. But no, I think Velasquez will just have too much for Verdum. I mean, Verdum's 39, and at some point, you know, time will catch up. And I think it could just be in this fight. Velasquez certainly hungry to get back into world title contention again. And, you know, he wants to become the heavyweight champion of the world once more. And that's something that I've certainly been bugging him for a long time now. And in terms of natural ability and flair, I think that he is completely the best heavyweight in the division. And I completely agree with you there. But Verdum, as a stand-up striker, has taken out some very, very top fighters. And, you know, Velasquez has to be careful that if he allows himself to get drawn in a stand-up battle, you know, Verdum's got a chance. Whereas if it goes to the ground, albeit though Verdum's got fantastic jiu-jitsu skills, Velasquez's wrestling is off the page, and you know, with his superior control, he might be able to negate any kind of opportunities that Verdum has in terms of employing any of his array of jiu-jitsu tactics. But Velasquez is certainly the one that I and you both predict to win this one. The semi-main event for the show then is a title contest between two guys who are mouthing off against each other on the UFC on Fox show, and that's the contender Cody Garbrandt against the champion Dominic Cruz. Where do you see this one going, Dave?
I think Dominic Cruz is one of the three best fighters in the world. I think the knee injuries obviously were horrendous, and he lost, what, 2-3 years of his career, but to come back the way he did against a really good fighter in Dillashaw, and then his last fight was just an exhibition. I think he's just going to have too much for Garbrandt. I just don't think he's on Cruz's level. I think there's very few fighters in the world on Cruz's level. And I see Cruz winning a dominant performance here.
Yeah, this is the first fight I'm actually going to disagree with you on, Dave. I'm going to put my neck out and go out on a limb here and actually predict a big upset. I just fancy Garbrandt to win this one, and I'll tell you why. I mean, he's been undefeated in his MMA career and has finished most of his fights. Most of them haven't gone the distance. So for the bantamweight division, he's actually got relatively heavy hands. And you know, he's quite versatile as well. He's good on the ground as well as standing up. But in that said, he's up against one of the most elusive fighters. In some ways, almost like the Floyd Mayweather Jr. of mixed martial arts in Dominic Cruz. And Cruz is just so, so good at avoiding opponents and just so good at negating those attacks. But like I was kind of saying with one of my previous comments. I just feel that Dominic Cruz has been around, you know, for a long, long time. Albeit he's still a young guy, he's only about 31. You know, he's been in a lot of wars, and you know, he's taken, you know, real hard beatings in some of these fights, and you know, some of these injuries he's had have been quite significant. And I just feel that there's the opportunity there for somebody to come along and pull off a big upset. And we've seen it in the past with dominant fighters like Anderson Silva, and you know, we saw how, you know, he came up and lost the title after you know, being champion for many years. And you know, I just feel that there might be something in Dominic Cruz's future like that. But I mean, he'll certainly be the strong favourite, Will Cruz, but I just fancy a bit of an upset here. So it's just a gut feel, nothing more than that. But I predict a win for Gibran. On to the main event then. And this is another female contest, and it's the return of the biggest female, certainly MMA fighter in the world, and arguably the biggest female sports star in the world, in Ronda Rousey. And she's up against the women's bantamweight champion Amanda Nunes, and this is a title fight that will certainly be one of the most watched contests of 2016. So where do you think this goes? Does Ronda Rousey return and reclaim her title, or do you think Nunes will be too good for her?
Mo, this is so hard to predict, because the last time we saw Rousey, she was badly beaten by Holly Holm, and all we've heard is kind of bad things since. There hasn't been much positive talk coming out of the Rousey camp. I don't think she should have been jumping right back in with a title fight. I think she should have had a fight to kind of find her feet and get back to her level. But this is what the UFC have decided to do. Nunes, for me, just looks like she might have a bit too much in terms of the striking. I don't think she's going to want to go to the ground with Rousey, because while she's a great grappler, so is Rousey. But I think she can outstrike her, and I think that's her avenue to victory. And I'm going to pick Amanda Nunes in this fight. I agree, Rousey's probably the biggest female star in all of sports, but I think that's kind of what affected her so much, was having to have all that on her plate, you know, like the movie stuff, WrestleMania, all the publicity, all the hype, having to do all the, you know, the PR stuff before her fights and stuff, really kind of got to her. And the same thing happened to McGregor, and McGregor was just able to handle it a lot better than her. But I just feel that maybe Rousey should have had a fight before this fight to find her level again. This is asking an awful lot of anybody to come back, you know, after such a long layoff and fight the champion. It's a little bit of a poor move by the UFC.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with you, but my theory on this one is that I think UFC are of the feeling that this might be Ronda's last fight, irrespective of the outcome, because, you know, she talked about contemplating suicide after her loss to Holly Holm. That's how badly that first fight affected her, which was, 13 months ago now. Mm. And I think that UFC's view is that if she wants to come back and just prove to herself that she's still got something, and if it doesn't work out and she disappears for good, that they'd rather that happen in a title fight against a champion where she almost puts over the champion and gives that champion a bit more credibility than if she goes in there against, you know, the number 7 or number 8 ranked contender in the division, loses in that contest, and then never comes back again.
Yeah, that's fair. That's very fair.
And that's my only kind of read of that. And I'm hoping I'm wrong. I'm hoping that she certainly intends to come back, and whether she wins or loses, that she stays around. But, you know, she's got a lot of offers from all different directions. We know that she's a big wrestling fan, and You know, the WWE would absolutely love to bring her in. And, you know, I think that at some point she'd like to go into the WWE, whether it's as a part-time or a full-time personality. You know, she gets movie offers, TV offers, endorsement opportunities all the time. You know, she's a very in-demand personality, celebrity, individual. And, you know, with all those demands, you know, there's a real impact on the amount of time that you can devote to training day in, day out to do mixed martial arts. It's a very, very demanding sport, which requires a lot of sacrifice. And, you know, she's been there to the top. And if she feels that she can no longer fulfill those demands, then, you know, she might just want to walk away. And I'm hoping that's not the case. I'm hoping she does stay around for a while. Yeah, I think she's got a lot to offer UFC and mixed martial arts. But it's a brave decision, whether it was a joint decision by UFC and Ronda Rousey, or if it was just a decision by UFC, you know, we'll see what the outcome is. But it will certainly be one of the biggest shows of 2016 to cap off what's been a magnificent year for UFC in terms of box office success, thanks largely to Conor McGregor. And we'll see what 2017 brings. So thanks for recapping that show then, Dave. Very much looking forward to it. And so UFC 207 then will be taking place on the 30th of December, which will be a nice way to see out the year, which has been a big one for UFC and mixed martial arts as 2016. 2017 promises to be just as big, if not bigger. And Dave and I will be here each month, bringing you all the key events, all the major events throughout the year. And giving you our take on them. So our next MMA monthly will be dropping around the 23rd of January, just in time for UFC on Fox, which we headline by Valentina Shevchenko and Juliana Pena in a women's bantamweight division contest main event. Donald Cerrone, as we talked about earlier on, will be also competing on that card. And we'll also be recapping UFC 207, as well as all the other big major talking points in the month of January. But in the meantime, keep on watching UFC, keep on watching mixed martial arts, and I hope you've enjoyed this pod. Thank you very much.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads. Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.